Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work. Enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Makaitis.
Hello, and thanks so much for joining us here for episode 189 with Ron Stodd's Josh Vesely. This is a powerful one because we have a senior executive with an interesting vantage point sharing all kinds of insider perspectives that you, I think, will want to know when it comes to the whole world of labor and opportunities and recruitment and positions, all that good stuff. We get into a good dose of it. So you're going to learn, one, how today's labor market is superlatively favorable to good talent. Two, why you should boldly ask your boss for your favorite opportunities. And three, how to find and leverage a recruiter in your job search. So if you'd like to check out the show notes or the transcript or the links to items referenced here, you'll find that over at awesomeatyourjob.com/ep189. And while you're at awesomeatyourjob.com, I encourage you to check out some of our great resources. One in particular I'll highlight is just that magnifying glass. It's in the navigation bar. If you click it, it lets you search the full text of all the transcripts from every guest we've ever had. So if you can remember anything a guest has said that was inspiring, or you don't even know what a guest said and you're looking for a particular issue that you're facing at work, we may well have talked to someone about it in our 189 episodes. So check it out. Now, here's Josh's story. Josh Vesely, MBA, is a talent chef and senior vice president of talent solutions at Randstad USA. He's an energy-giving partner and a powerful negotiator. With his positive attitude, he boldly develops new concepts and contributes to an innovative market approach. So a huge thanks to Josh for sharing his time and expertise with us, and a huge thanks to our sponsor. It's Text Expander by Smile. With Text Expander, you can type a little bit or abbreviation of text, and that will expand into a whole lot more text. So that will save you from having to type those repetitive things. And it can also multiply the productivity for a team that's using a shared snippet base. You can visit textexpander.com/awesome to start your free trial. Now, here's Josh. Josh, thanks so much for joining us here on the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks so much.
Can you tell us a little bit about your nickname, or that you call yourself Talent Chef? What's this about?
Yeah, it's a recent talent or a recent name that I came across. So I was talking to somebody, and you might know this from our previous discussions, but we acquired Monster not too long ago, and we've been doing a lot of collaboration with Google, and Google for Jobs is this new platform that they've designed. And instead of just taking a one size fits all approach to to finding a job or to mapping out your career, what Google for Jobs is doing, what Monster is doing, is taking a whole bunch of different ingredients. So culture and salary and benefits and just all these different reviews and information that's out there, and putting it into a place where individuals can see that, they can contribute to that material, and hopefully it helps people make better decisions on where they want to go work. And so I thought about that, and a lot of what I do in working with companies is putting together the different ingredients, the different flavors of what makes them a great place to work, and then putting that in a format that allows the world to see it. So I really just feel like whether it's your own career and you need different experiences and levels and lengths of time within different organizations. The same is said for organizations when they're approaching how to make the best talent decisions of who comes to work for them. So it takes a whole bunch of different ingredients to make the best recipe, if you will.
Understood. And you do this frequently in your role. Can you give us just a quick background on what's Randstad USA, the company, and your role as the Senior Vice President of Talent Solutions all about? Just to orient quickly there.
Sure. So what is Randstad USA? So we have been historically known as a staffing company, which I think is how most individuals would probably categorize us if they were put on the spot. What I would say is we are the largest talent delivery engine in the world, not only in the U.S., but so what that means to me is we have access to the most candidates across a diverse spectrum of skill sets, everything from manufacturing and warehousing to healthcare, nursing, and executives to bring to organizations that are looking for the best people to come work for them. So that's what I would say Randstad USA is. What I do here is I work with organizations, typically in the Fortune 1000, to identify the right talent strategy of how to build their organization and make them the most effective they can be. And I think that has changed significantly over the last 7 years to become a much more diversified strategy, where it used to be I hired a full-time person or I hired a temporary employee, and I used both of those strategies in silos and in separate and different ways. But the way that the world is today is you need to look at all different types of resources to get the work done and to be the most effective and efficient that you can be in the world.
Okay. Well, that's so helpful. Thank you for orienting a bit. So you have one of the most fascinating potential vantage points, you know, I'd say, in terms of the world of work and jobs and employment and the whole marketplace, how that's going on. When we were chatting previously, you were getting me so excited just about the lay of the land right now and how it's an employee's market. Could you elaborate a little bit about that and some of the most striking trends that you're observing, you know, these days here in 2017?
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's a lot of different trends that are transforming the way work gets done. And I'll take a step back to just share what I think the biggest challenge is. So if anybody's ever going to look for a new position or make a career change or just enter the market in the first place, I'd always want them to be aware of what is most organizations' primary challenge that they face today, which is the cost of resources, human capital, is going up somewhere between 5 to 7% a year. And so most companies, their number one cost in terms of a line item in their budget is their people. And that cost goes up every year because of annual increases or healthcare or other benefits, somewhere around, you know, 5 to 11% a year. And so what that means is most companies can't pass that type of a cost increase down to their customers. So they need to become more efficient with the people that they have. And they need to become more efficient as they grow, because the goal of most organizations is to grow. And so anybody that can help contribute to that efficiency in what they do for the company has a very valuable place in that organization. But that wasn't necessarily your question. Your question was what's facing the marketplace. So since the labor market has really been measured, there's three measurements that really kind of guide where we are from a supply and demand perspective within employment. The first is how many new jobs are being created every month, how many people are being hired into jobs every month, and then what is the quit rate that month, meaning how many people are choosing to leave their position without being asked to leave or suffering some sort of larger reduction in force or downsizing. So, because month to month, unemployment is really impacted by those three things. So, for the first time in history, since all those metrics have been tracked, you now have a situation where there are more new job openings every month than there are new hires, which means the amount of new hires is no longer exceeding the new job openings. So new job openings continue to grow every month, and that gap is getting larger. And as that gap gets larger, it's more unsustainable. And at the same time, also contributing to that trend, more and more people are choosing to quit their job, either A, because they're retiring from the workforce, or B, they're unhappy with what they're doing and there's so much opportunity that's out there that they're getting another job and they're choosing to leave the one they have, which adds to another job opening, which creates this ever-widening gap between the number of positions that get filled and the number of positions that get opened every month in the country.
And just how dramatic, you said this is the first time in history that we've observed this, so that sounds striking. And so how big is that gap?
So what I can say is I don't know the exact number. And throughout 2016, you saw this kind of ebb and flow where for the first time, there was more new job openings than there were new job hires. But then it would kind of dip back down where the two would cross over, and it went back and forth throughout the year. Since January of this year, it has always been more new job openings than new job hires. And every month, the gap continues to get wider.
Wow. So the implication there is if you are a talented professional, you got options.
So for the general economy, right, and for whoever chooses to believe, the national unemployment figure is somewhere around 4 to 4.5%, depends on what research you look at. But for a college-educated individual, I would say it's less than 1%. If you're in a STEM field, any sort of science, technology, engineering, or mathematics, it is probably as close to 0% as you could get before, you know, actually registering a significant amount of the population.
Hot dog. Okay. So that's where it is. So that is largely segmented, I guess, based on, you know, the 4 or 4.5% number looks very different based on if we're talking about having college degrees and whatnot. So are the headlines that we've seen about folks graduating from great schools and having a heck of a time finding a job, is that kind of behind us? Or is there another kind of wrinkle or subsegment to mention there with that story?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's always wrinkles I would say exceptions, because what I do find is that the entry level job is not as available as it was before. So okay, if you're graduating with a major that isn't in the sciences, so maybe a liberal arts degree, and you didn't do any internships and you haven't really worked or been a part of any clubs, you're going to struggle to find a decently paying entry level position. Because the fact of the matter is a lot of that work has been automated away. You know, I've got technology that can schedule meetings in my calendar and remind me to do things. So I don't need an assistant, even as a senior vice president, where 15 years ago, I probably had an assistant to do all that stuff for me.
Right.
So individuals that are graduating, may not have the opportunity to get into a, you know, middle management $50,000 a year job, but they certainly have enough opportunities to go to work.
Okay, understood.
And I separated the two, the college degree and the STEM workforce, because I want to make it very clear, individuals that have a STEM background, so if you're a coder or, you know, somebody who has a mechanical background from the military, you might not have a college degree. But again, you're probably as close to 0% unemployment as it gets with that skill set and expertise, versus the college degree and that is something totally different.
Okay. So that helps orient things. Thank you. So then now you mentioned something striking in our previous conversation was that you feel pretty comfortable just kind of moseying over to your boss and saying, hey, you know what? I'm getting kind of bored here, looking for some different sorts of challenges. So I guess I'm going to look elsewhere unless you got some new kind of opportunities in this direction. You shared that with me and said you've given that advice to others. And I found that striking, like, whoa, that could take some cojones. It's like, that might not play so well. But you're saying that's kind of where the marketplace is, that you have a great deal of assuredness.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's certainly the appropriate way to have conversations in that regard. But I think that the real Listen, I've been with this organization for 11 years. And in that 11 years, I've had what I would probably consider 9 different jobs. And the company has grown and changed in such a dynamic way that it's allowed me to do that. But I always want to have an upfront agreement or an upfront contract, if you will, with anybody that's leading me to say, I'm going to give you 100% of what I got. Cause I don't think that it's, you know, I don't believe in the whole, I'm going to give you 110, 120%. I'm going to give you 100% of what I got, which is a lot. But when I feel like I'm in a place where I'm not as satisfied with the work or, you know, I'm just not as motivated, instead of me starting to give you 75 or 80% of what I got, why don't I just come talk to you about that and see if there's something else that I should be doing?
All right. Sounds very reasonable and, in fact, superior for the person who's in the position of leading you.
Yeah. I mean, it's to me, it's an empowerment thing for my leader to know exactly where I'm at, so they know they can always expect the most out of me. And if they don't get that and I didn't bring it up first, well, then shame, that's my fault.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then I got what's coming to me.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. And so then I guess underlying that, then it seems to be like a fundamental belief or expectation that there are good and worthy and suitable opportunities all around you.
100%. I mean, you know, I hope that I can stay in the same field for as long as I live, because the one thing that I can always count on is that as much as technology grows and we get to be more of a global, culture, you're always going to need people. You're going to need people that can make the right decisions, that can take the technology and innovations and apply it in the right ways. And that's not an easy thing to do in this day and age, because what I see is information overload. So I've got so much more information to look at, whether it's through social media or the types of assessments that I can put people through. And so even if I can get the right person, well, then I've got all these things that, you know, I've got to look at to ensure that I've got a way to identify that person again, or, you know, verify that I have the right person. And so what I'm doing and what I know is going to be available to me no matter where I sit is just that, being able to orchestrate helping individuals find the right organizations and organizations find the right individuals.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so then I'd like to get your take then. So other than having a STEM background, what are some key things professionals can do to be in just a fantastic position, to be able to be pretty candid with their bosses about where they're sitting and to have just a cornucopia of options open to them? And like, what are sort of the keys to the kingdom here of all this opportunity?
Well, I mean, for individuals, I think everybody has the ability to, first of all, be very clear about what they want and what they want in their career and from their leadership and from themselves. So, you know, if I'm somebody who's out there and I'm looking for opportunity and, Josh Vesely walks up to me and says, well, great, what do you want? And I can't clearly articulate that in the first 30 seconds of answering the question, then I've got some homework to do. But once I understand what I want, then the first thing I would do is I would evangelize that. I would tell my friends, I would tell my boss, I would tell my significant other, and I would just talk about it all the time. And I would understand what others have done to achieve that or to get to that specific role. And I think just doing those three things and being clear, evangelizing it and studying others that have done something similar, the answers will become apparent. And if they don't, then maybe you got to go back to step one and be a little bit more clear about what you want.
Okay. Well, that sounds pretty simple and straightforward in terms of getting that clarity. And so maybe Can you share, you know, what might be some hangups in terms of why do folks, do you think, linger in the, well, you know, I'm not really quite sure. It might be this, it might be that. What do you think holds folks back from arriving at that clarity with quickness and precision?
Besides self-doubt, I don't know if most individuals, because this is what I do for a living, right? But I don't know if most individuals would log on to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and look at the JOLTS report and really just see for themselves, like, hey, there's a lot of opportunity. And gosh, there's even more in engineering than there is in data entry and really take a proactive look. Even if they're, you know, somewhat happy in their role, like, yeah, what's the company next door doing? Are they hiring? You know, what's going on in your local market? And so I think individuals, fear of just exploring general opportunities is a lot of times what holds them back, because it seems like a lot until you start doing a few of the simple things to just gain insights around what opportunities lie around you.
Oh, perfect. You say it seems like a lot. You mean there's a bit of a self-doubt or sense of overwhelm, like, oh, how could I figure it out? There's so many things out there. And you're saying, no, just take a couple steps, you know, click around and see what you see. And bit by bit, you'll get that insight.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really don't see that being as much of a challenge anymore with what I would probably say is the younger Gen X, certainly the millennials, and now we have Gen Z coming into the workforce population, because what used to be a standard tenure or a career at an organization and, you know, might be 15, 20 years, in the last 10 years, that's become more like 5 to 7. And I think now we're starting to see a trend of, you know, 3 years is typically the standard length of time that somebody's staying in a role, either before that role goes away because you don't need that person or that type of worker in the organization anymore, or that individual has chosen to leave to go on to their next thing.
Okay. Understood. Well, now I'd like to switch gears a little bit and hear just about the world of working with recruiters. You know this game exceptionally well. So could you maybe orient folks who have never considered working with a recruiter to, you know, what's the advantages? Like, why go with a middleman, middlewoman, when you could take the direct route?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as cliche and you know, corny as it might sound, I would just simply say, and a recruiter can be a corporate recruiter too, right? It has nothing to do with like an agency recruiter versus a recruiter at an organization. But it's about who you know more than what you know. I firmly believe that most organizations that blindly post positions to their career site get more than enough applicants. But the validation of, you know, I know Josh and I trust Josh, and Josh is telling me that, I should hire Pete. Okay. There's something to be said about the validation of Josh, 'cause I know him, about Pete versus, Pete applied to this job and he looks okay, but I don't really have any context around Pete. So I would say, if you're going to work with a recruiter, make sure that they know the hiring manager that they're recruiting for or the organization that they're recruiting for very well. And that's why you should work with them, is because they know things about that organization that can help them sell you if they think you're a good fit for that company in that role.
Okay. And so is it also true that at times working with a recruiter might even be a more direct route to getting an interview than applying right on the website or the job board or wherever the posting is?
Yes. I think that, again, depending on the recruiter that you're working with, you know, individuals should continue to apply for as many opportunities as they think they are qualified for. And this is something I want to be very clear about. So many times we will actively use, you know, job advertising, job boards, and and content marketing to get jobs out to individuals to apply to. But a lot of times people will apply to things that they're just totally unqualified for. And they'll say, but if you just give me the interview, I can convince you that I'm the greatest, you know, clinical research scientist you've ever met. But yes, I've only done real estate my entire life. It's like, whoa, no, that doesn't make any sense. So the reason why I say that, and the reason I'll validate your statement of it being a more direct route, is because the recruiter is going to validate that person. And sometimes that means saying no to them or saying you're not qualified for this position.
Right.
So I think that's the case where many individuals want to be in that role, but they're just not ready for it, or that's not the right role for them.
Okay, understood. Well, so you mentioned it when it comes to working with recruiters, one thing you'd love for them to know is just the hiring manager that is applicable for the position you're after, the company you like. So what are some other things we should know about finding the appropriate recruiters and working with them effectively?
So I think in our organization, at least, you have to know the skill set that you're working with. So we specifically have experts that are only dedicated towards life sciences and the industry of clinical research and pharmaceuticals. So they could tell very, very easily the story of the individual with that industry and with that skill set framed up very concisely for organizations to see and then bring into their process. Same thing with technologies and being able to articulate somebody's experience with both a behavioral and a technical write-up. So I think that's the one thing that really sticks out to me with a good recruiter is they know the organization they're recruiting for. They also know the skill set very well, and they can respond to questions of similar types of roles and individuals they've placed that would be comparable to what you're looking for.
Okay. So those are some telltale signs that we've got a winner, you know, when we're talking with them. How do we find them in the first place?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if there's any shortage of recruiters out there. I mean, just to be clear, you know, there's close to almost 18,000 staffing firms out there in this country. So, start with your own network. I mean, if you're somebody who's on Facebook and you haven't talked to your high school friends in a long time, somebody is probably a recruiter. So I'd start with who you know. And even if they're not directly in the industry, asking other individuals where they've had a great experience. Working with recruiters will typically give you back a bunch of responses that you can follow up on.
Okay, certainly. So you're saying use your own network. There's not so much a directory or a resource or a landing page you'd point us to.
Well, I mean, I'd say come to Randstad first and foremost.
Oh, sure.
But, you know, the landing page is Google. I mean, you can go on and say, recruiters in XYZ industry, and it could be literally anything like offshore oil and gas drilling. And there are firms that just specialize in that. So research has become very simple in terms of finding out who to work for. And then you take the names of those companies and you go to websites like Kununu or Glassdoor or Indeed, and you can find out, you know, what are people saying about these companies and what are their experiences in working with them. So you don't have to do a whole lot of digging around to find out who are the companies and what are people saying about them and what are their ratings.
Okay. Sure thing. Well, so now, you know, I'd love to hear then, it sounds like a lot of the things you're saying are just sort of some practical, wise, common sense things we should do. I'd love it. Do you have any sort of secret strategies, tips, tricks, tactics when it comes to seeking out and finding great opportunities? Maybe some things that are overlooked by the typical job hunter?
You know, I don't think it's a bad thing to go for, you know, what I would say is, you know, going for the no, like, if you are a certain way, if your behavior your personality is a certain way, and you know, you get really emotionally charged, and you know, you like to get excited about things, and you're going to look for opportunities. I would say, you know, be very open and honest and almost blunt about who you are with your recruiter, with the organizations you're looking to work with. Because there's nothing worse than, you know, going into a role and going through a very long and lengthy process to meet a bunch of people and you know, have yourself kind of ask questions of over many rounds of interviews. And then you get in and you're like, man, I can't really be myself here.
Right.
So I think that one of the things that you'll find refreshing is if you're just yourself and every bit of your personality, and you just network the hell out of that, there's going to be a lot of organizations that get turned off, and there's going to be a lot of organizations and people that are attracted to that because they're looking for that. The other thing I would say to most individuals is don't consider just a traditional job. I think the biggest shift we've seen in the last few years is that you can be an independent contractor. You know, you can set up your own business and just consult. You can be a freelancer and just do, you know, odds and ends types of projects. You can certainly be a contractor or a temporary employee, and you can be a full-time employee. So, I mean, there's all these different options and avenues to go work for organizations that it's not like you need to go be a 9-to-5 full-time employee, and that's the only option you have open to you these days. It's totally open to experimentation.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, Josh, I want to make sure while I've got you here, I want to tackle a very tricky question that shows up in the recruiting cycle. And it seems like there's conflicting opinions and much consternation on it. So I want to get your pro take on it. If someone is applying for a job and they're going through the application and or some of the preliminary early stage interviews and they hit that question, oh, what's your current salary? Or what is the optimal way to respond, particularly if you think, well, my current salary is inadequate and below what I should be making, and that's why I'm looking for a change. How do you play that game?
So this is on an application?
It could be on an application, or it could be a live conversation in the early stages of recruiting.
Yeah. So two different thoughts on that. I think in an application, it's something to be discussed in an interview, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're at the very early stages of the process, then I think it's too early to have that discussion. And what I would probably ask that person to say is, you know, I'm more than happy to answer that question when you feel like I'm the right fit for the position. But if you don't mind me asking, there must be some sort of a range that, you know, you're looking to fill this position with. So if you don't mind, can you share that range just so, you know, before we move any further, I can tell you whether or not I'm comfortable within that range for what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I like it. And it's very real. It's honest. So you're saying that in an application setting, that's, or I guess that would be the live conversation if you're expecting a response right there on the spot. Is that what you're envisioning, the context there?
Yeah, I mean, if you, well, you also have to be self-aware, right? So if you know you're at the high end of the spectrum for what you do, then there's also a part of me that says, you know, listen, I know I'm at the high end of the spectrum for what I do, but before we get into numbers and then having that conversation. But if it's something where you really don't know, like you don't know what, you know, maybe you're earlier in your career or you haven't done enough research on that organization, then I think of responding that, you know, it's just too early because you don't, first of all, you don't know enough about the organization to know whether or not it's a fit for you. And they certainly don't know enough for you because they're not making you a job offer at that point. Then I think putting it off, but at least getting some guardrails to make sure that everybody's on the same page and reducing what, you know, we might call mutual mystification is more than fair.
Okay. I dig it. Well, Josh, tell me, is there anything else you want to make sure to mention before we shift gears and hear about some of your favorite things?
You know, I think individuals far and away are creating their own path. So, you know, I don't find too many folks, and some that are a little bit earlier in their career, yes, that are struggling to, you know, really get outside of the traditional lines of employment and jobs and things like that. So I think as you are exploring opportunities in your career and wondering kind of what's possible, you know, having discussions with different folks that are in the same field, but maybe in a different context or relationship from an employment perspective. So if you're a full-time employee, you're thinking about consulting, go talk to a bunch of consultants. Or if you're a consultant, you're thinking about full-time role, you know, I think there's a lot of avenues to go have open, honest communication. And there's so much information that's just available, whether it's, again, on employer rating sites or even just information that's available from salary websites and information that people have this great ability to go out there and explore. So I advocate that a lot.
One tool I use to set up research conversations is Text Expander by Smile. With Text Expander, I will type just a bit of an abbreviation of text, and that will expand into whole emails that I'll send out to folks. So one context I use it often is if I'm emailing a client for an upcoming speaking or training engagement, I might simply type /speak, and that will expand into a full email consisting of multiple paragraphs all about how I'm looking forward to the engagement, would love to set up a call in advance to better understand the particularities of their goals or their logistics or the room setup, acoustics, etc. And from there, I'll do a little customizing tweaks and we're done. So that saves a good 1-3 minutes. And then those couple minutes will really add up email after email, day after day. Text Expander for Teams lets a whole group operate from a shared knowledge base with everyone using the optimal verbiage for those repetitive responses. You can start your free trial today at textexpander.com/awesome. Text Expander is one of my favorite things. Now let's hear Josh's. Okay, thank you. Well, now could you share with us a favorite quote, something you find inspiring?
Well, you know, Joe Maddon became general manager for the Cubs a few years ago. And one of the great things that he said is, you know, we're just going to do simple better. He also said, try not to suck. So, you know, I think those two go hand in hand because, you know, a lot of the times it's just, we just overcomplicate everything because there's so much information and there's so much technology and, things that we could do, or decision points that we could change. And it's like, well, you know, I'm just going to give it my best shot. And, if I don't suck, then I feel okay about it. And, you know, hopefully through that process, I can make it really simple for somebody to work with me, for me, or lead me. And that would be kind of my ultimate goal every day when I lay my head down at the end of the night.
All right. And how about a favorite book?
Yeah, I'm all over the place with books. I love to actually just listen to books on Audible. Because I travel a lot and it's just easier for me to plug in some headphones and listen. There's a really good book called Mindset that I read not too long ago. So I'd say that it's not necessarily my favorite, but it's a recent favorite of mine.
Oh, absolutely. It's a powerful one. And how about a favorite habit, a personal practice of yours?
Oh, gosh. I'm not good with habits. You know, I tend to wake up early and go to bed late, but I don't know if that's a habit that I want to necessarily advocate to others. There's another fairly significant marketing leader out there, Gary Vee. I'm sure you've heard of Gary Vee before,
right?
But you know, he always talks about winning the genetic lottery and being born a human being and in the U.S. And the fact that, you know, at some point we're all going to die. And so I think, you know, mine is just getting as many hours in the day and being alive during those hours as possible. But, I try to work out sometimes. I try to, you know, read as much as I can and just be engaged with folks. But I'm probably not as habitual about those things as I am just, you know, spending as much hours awake as I can and being alive.
Okay. And is there a particular nugget that you share, any articulation of one of your messages or beliefs or tidbits that really seems to resonate with folks? They nod their heads, they take notes at Josh's brilliance.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think being something I've learned the hard way, and I'm by no means an expert in, is the ability to just take a step back and say, you know, I don't know everything, and the power of a network is incredibly important, not from the perspective of being able to lean on others to make connections and accomplish things. But from a knowledge standpoint, it's too much in this day and age for a leader of any level to try to know everything. So I really try to surround myself or be connected to those that that know more than I do in certain areas, so I don't have to. And I think individuals that try to be the master of everything end up being the master of nothing. So, you know, I encourage people to really take a look at their networks, grow them, but grow them in the areas that they're weakest, so they don't feel like they have to improve in something that's going to be a really long, hard haul for them to improve in.
Okay. And if folks want to learn more or get in touch, where would you point them?
I'd point them to LinkedIn to connect with me. And if that doesn't work for whatever reason, I would say, you know, reach out to any local Randstad office and ask them to connect you with Josh Vesely.
Okay. Or do you have a final call to action or challenge for folks seeking to be awesome at their jobs?
Don't be afraid to leave something that you hate doing. I think, people have a fear of leaping, from something that feels comfortable because of the unknown. But quickly you will find that the unknown is very, can be very clearly understood. If you do some research, if you do some outreach, and, a little bit of comfort should go a long way, because, there's too much opportunity out there for folks to try to accomplish things, and people are needed everywhere for you to settle for something that just doesn't make you happy.
All right. Well, Josh, thank you so much for this. Fantastic perspectives. Much appreciated. Good luck with all you're up to.
Pete, thanks so much, and hope you have a great rest of your day.
What I loved most from this conversation with Josh is just the data-driven underlying support for the notion that opportunities are abundant. And so there's really not a whole lot of good reason or excuse, should I say, to entertain these ideas of fearfulness or scarcity, that you really got to sort of toe the line and deal with a job that you don't like, or opportunities that are just not quite right, or a toxic environment. Like, odds are you don't, unless there's some exceptionally challenging circumstances that are affecting you in a given moment. And hopefully, odds are still that that is a temporary move and you can already start formulating your exit strategy and approach. So opportunities are much more abundant than perhaps we're aware of. And thusly, it is well worth it to explore and to go after what you want to go do. And so I think that's encouraging, optimistic, good news from Josh, with a lot of good numbers supporting it. So again, if you want to check out the show notes or the transcripts or the links to items that we referenced here, that's back at awesomeatyourjob.com/ep189. And from there, you can also check out our sponsor, Text Expander by Smile. Tell me how you're using their cool stuff. You're expanding abbreviations in creative ways in your calendar or your email or your Word docs, whatever you're doing. I love learning the cool tips and tricks. You can start your free trial by clicking their link in the show notes or visiting them directly at textexpander.com/awesome. And I hope you'll push subscribe so you'll hear from folks like our next guest. It's Jody Glickman. She's talking about the gift of good communication, how it's done well and masterfully in the small and big things. So I hope to catch you there, and peace.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. To get the most out of this conversation, visit awesomeatyourjob.com to find today's show notes, transcript, and infographic summary cheat sheet. For more entertaining professional skill sharpening, be sure to subscribe to catch the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.